All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And if you've ever wondered how a real estate powerhouse conquers the market's changing challenges, today I'm joined by Nancy of the dynamic duo of Nancy Delgard and Dave Billings, experts in the micro markets and multi-use commercial buildings, from flipping homes to thriving in hospitality. She's here to reveal some of the secrets of their success. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bryce. Good morning.
Yeah, I got
it's
my
nice
coffee.
to be here.
I'm ready to go.
It's important.
Yeah, the sun is peaking up and we're beating. It's always good to beat the sun up and get started. So let's talk about getting started. How did you get started in real estate?
Both Dave and I have a construction background, so I've been in construction pretty much my entire career. I am a sheet metal mechanic by trade, and Dave is a gas fitter and a refrigeration mechanic by trade. So we have been in it for years. I owned a heating and air conditioning business a lifetime ago, it seems. And after that, we've always been in some type of real estate. You know, I would say that we fell into it. So I had a single family home that I duplexed years and years ago, and then kind of just did one after another. It was basically stumbling from one to the other until about probably 5 years ago when Dave and I got together. We had gone to a weekend retreat basically for real estate. And we decided at that point that we would get more serious and dive into it and really start to take a vested interest and really plan our direction and what we're actually going to do in real estate.
Yeah, that's one of the most important things, I think, in real estate, is that there's lots that you could do. And so figuring out what you want to do and what you want it to do for you is really, I think, a key to success in real estate. Otherwise, you just end up chasing the next shiny thing. So right now, what are you guys doing in business today?
We have, over the last, 5 years, really, we're kind of a slow and steady growth. We again, once we got focused, we started with lots of flips, single family to duplexes, just kind of flipping here and there, some commercial stuff. We flipped a sixplex. That was our first big building, which we really didn't plan on flipping. We were going to buy and hold it, but at the time, the market was just crazy, like we all know, and it was just too good not to flip it. So we did that. And then lately, we've really focused our efforts on these micro markets and commercial and building residential. So it's always nice to not have to, evict people in buildings when you're trying to renovate and whatnot. It's necessary, but it's nice not to have to do it. So we have created, we do unit creation. We buy old rundown buildings that nobody else generally wants. And we create both residential and commercial spaces in them. And it's worked out really well for us. So we're in a tiny little micro market called Teeswater. And it's excellent. We love it. We love being there. It's been a great place for us to be the last few years. We've done quite a bit down there. So,
yeah, it's always interesting when you hear people talking about working in smaller, like secondary and third tertiary markets, because people get a little nervous about whether or not they can, be a real estate investor at all outside of like a major market. So the conversions that you guys are doing, I guess you're taking like warehouses or older buildings that are larger and cutting them down, doing things like that, bringing in the plumbing and whatever you need to do to kind of retrofit the building. How are you navigating the, because there's always permits and plans and this and that, especially when it comes to retrofitting buildings. There's a lot. It almost seems like it would be easier to do new construction. So how do you navigate a lot of those challenges?
It definitely would be easier to do new construction, but we really like the heritage type buildings, without that heritage designation, because that makes it more tough. But the one thing that we do find in these small tertiary markets is that they are loving the growth. They want people to come to their towns and change their old rundown buildings that nobody's in. So, we literally have taken two buildings. We're starting on the third, that had nothing in them. So they were downtown commercial buildings that nobody has been in or run businesses in for 10 or more years. So the townships are really anxious to work with us. And so there's a ton of challenges with working with a building that's, built in the 1800s. Some of it is infrastructure from the township side, and some of it is just, obviously replacing everything. So we go in and we literally take it right to the studs, sometimes right to the brick wall, reframe roof, windows, doors, electrical, plumbing, like the entire building. So yes, it would be certainly easier to build it fresh from the ground up. But you don't get that heritage feeling, and that, we're in these buildings, we're able to keep some of the exposed brick walls, which we haven't been able to do before, because these buildings are in between other buildings. So it's nice to be able to expose that kind of stuff and really keep as much of the heritage of the building as we can, and then bring in all the obviously modern amenities and brand new kitchens and granite countertops and all the nice stuff. So it's worked out really well. People absolutely love the apartments that we create. Renting them has not been an issue. We are short term. We specialize in short term. Again, landlord tenant board in Ontario is not landlord friendly, so we stay on the short term side, and it really midterm markets. And where we are, there's a lot of need for a midterm rental, so that works out really well as well.
So when there's a section in Robert Kiyosaki's book, he calls it the unfair advantage. When it comes to real estate, for the two of you, what do you think the secret sauce is? What comes easy to you that some people might find more difficult or too difficult to even consider?
I think we're fortunate. I also owned a bookkeeping company for 20 some odd years. So we have both sides. The numbers are easy for me. They come naturally for me. We run numbers backwards and forwards. I feel that it's absolutely imperative that you know exactly what your numbers are before you go borrow money from somebody else. So in the beginning, we started, like everybody else, with your own money and, taking the equity out of your own primary residence to go and do some stuff. We specialized in getting all of those systems in place and figuring out how to run our numbers before we went out and ever borrowed money from somebody else. So, and because we both have the construction background side of it, it just seemed like it was all the things that came together to make it easier, certainly never easy, but easier to get into doing this business. It seemed like, our backgrounds had come together and just provided all of the support we needed to get into this business. So that was that's part of that magic that comes. We never, as far as working together, we didn't ever plan on working together full time. Dave had a great job in we were both professors actually at Conestoga, and teaching in the HVAC program there. And he had cancer. He got cancer when we were doing the flip on our sixplex. So that kind of, changed obviously everything in our world. And so from there, he couldn't go back to work. So it was never that we really planned on working full time together, but it has worked out, and thank God we had, what we had on the go with real estate, because you just never know what's in front of you in life, and you have to be consistent with your growth and your plan and stick to it no matter what happens, you know. So it was good for that. So now, again, those experiences in our background provide us the solid foundation for what we do today.
Yeah, it's always nice when what you've done in the past somehow gets all tied together and becomes the most, all of the things that you either love or know how to do suddenly become valuable in what you're doing. So what does the future look like? What are you guys working on now and into the future, let's say 12 months out?
Currently, we're opening a bar in one of the a golf actually simulator pub in one of the commercial units that we own. So that's keeping us busy. We have a beautiful short-term rental corporate retreat space also in that town called the Post and Beam. And so that hospitality side we're expanding on. And then for both of us, we're both really passionate about cohabitational living. So we're trying to develop something with that. We are actually our own family home. We're going to change into a fiveplex and have some sort of an agreement for seniors. We really would like to provide some stable, affordable housing for seniors. So we're going to start with this place because it lends itself really well to it. And we'll find someplace else to live.
So, with everything that you've accomplished so far with the different buildings and, really going head to head with retrofitting these older brick buildings, which there's always a challenge. There's always a building code that these things don't meet, or there's something that has to be replaced or removed. What would you say your biggest obstacle is these days?
Definitely in navigating the building code constantly for just what you said. The buildings are, obviously they're not built to today's standards. So we're always working closely with the building inspectors to, figure out how to obviously make the building safe and bring it up to code. But sometimes you just can't, the old code just doesn't match with today's code. And so you have to find solutions. We are constantly solution finders, to try and figure out how to best manage that situation. But there is a ton of challenges with older buildings. So, and it's expensive. That's generally what it comes down to is it can sometimes be more expensive to retrofit these old buildings than to build new. And certainly, the challenge of doing that is time as well, because it generally takes longer, So we've managed to cut those times down. We're probably on average 8 months start to finish between buying the building to the point we're refinanced. So it's not terrible, but we could build something in less time.
Yeah, it's
But
usually insulation or fire code stuff, like
fire code.
this doesn't have a burn rating and this isn't going to, meet the insulation heating requirements or ventilation requirements, circulation, and who knows if you find something that has to be remediated or whatever. So, yeah, definitely you're doing the hard work in the business. Not to say that there's not hard work everywhere, but retrofitting is certainly something that you're. In the can of worms business, you're opening all the cans when you're doing that. So, with these buildings being kind of a one-off, the strategy's similar, but it's not such a cookie cutter style of business. How do you find that that affects your ability to fund and raise capital for these projects?
That's kind of a bonus, right? When you're in these tertiary markets, the buildings themselves are obviously a third of the cost of what they are in the city. The renovation is still the same, from that really doesn't change, but our initial investment is much less, and our rents are probably only about 10% less than the city. So once we turn them, they're very cash flow positive, which is something we would never get in the city. We
Yeah.
stopped in the city, when the market went crazy, because it's not impossible. Nothing is impossible, but it's very difficult to cash flow in the city, and certainly not from the size of the units that we're doing. We have a couple of commercial, maybe two or three commercial units on the bottom, three apartments at the top. They cash flow really well when you're only paying, $200,000 or $250,000 for a building,
Yeah,
and
for the
then
whole
sinking all
building.
the rate. It's crazy. So and so that part of it's capital versus operating all the time, right? Are you spending more capital or less? And then, are you more profitable? So we look for stuff that cash flows. That's our number one goal. It has to cash flow, because this is our full-time business. So, we need that cash flow. So it has to, those were, that's where our numbers come in, and that's where we run. And sometimes, we still do flips. We're purchasing one right now. And we will flip it, and it'll be a great flip for capital. But for the most part, it's got a cash flow well for us to even look at it.
So what's one of the strategies that you're using right now to access the money to fund some of these deals?
We do lots, actually. We do a lot of private borrowing. We do owner financing, so lots of VTBs. We
Yeah, I
have
imagine
obviously
that's
our
big
own.
in that space where, vendor financing on these buildings that have been kind of sitting for a while.
Yes. And again, I think that lends itself to this tertiary market, because these people have had these businesses for, or these buildings forever. They don't owe anything on them, and they're not, again, they're not worth a ton of money. So it's easy to get vendor financing on these buildings, and often with way more, better interest rates than anything we would get in the city. And it's 100% owner financed. So we give them, they take the 100% financing, we give them a balloon payment at the end. So that part of, the building is, we don't have to worry about a monthly payment there. And then we go to private lenders. We have a fairly decent base of private lenders that we work with, often, so they've been in our world for the last few years, and we always obviously pay them back and on time and with good interest rates. And so that part of it will have to grow as we grow and do bigger buildings, but for sure it's a good start.
Yeah, it's probably the old typewriter repair shop that's been there, that's been empty for 15 years. The guy's like, okay, yeah, I'll give you a VTB on that. I'll hold this until you're able to bring it to a conclusion, because you're gonna have to clear out all these old typewriters first. But what are you doing
Have
right
no
now
idea
to?
how true that
Well, yeah, it's really those businesses where the guy, instead of selling it maybe at the peak or at the towards the end of that cycle of that particular business, he's just like, you know what, I'm just gonna close, just put the close sign up, never came back, never decided to do anything with it, and just kept sitting on it. And and especially in the secondary and tertiary markets. So how are you going about expanding your network of prospective investors? Because you mentioned earlier in the show that I guess you guys like to go to different networking events and things like that, because I'm sure there's people like in town that are possibly interested in investing. But I was talking to a guy on an episode last night where he's investing from Richmond into Edmonton, and I said, well, how do you get your local people to participate in something that seems like so far away? And what are you doing to like bring new investors to these smaller markets?
I think it goes right back to what you were saying. We are networking. Now we're starting to open up our circle. We have our own monthly group, meeting group, but it's pretty small, right? We keep it small on purpose, which, looking back, might not be the smartest idea. But we've just started with a social media person to start, putting out more of what we do so that people can actually see it, because I think that social media is a great way to show an investor exactly what you do and who you are and how that process works along the way. So we've just started that process. And then just getting out, doing these kind of podcasts, getting out, meeting new people, finding out what other people are doing to raise funds. And because it's always, you are always learning. No matter what process you're in or what stage you're in this business, you are always learning. So, and I love learning. I love to talk to people that are, two steps farther ahead than us. I think that's always a good thing. And I love to share information with people that are two steps behind us. So I think that's all part of the process. And then just being able to get out and meet different people and expand that group so that you have more access to funds, because without the private money, you're almost dead in the water. It's very, very difficult. You can't grow at that level anyways, because certainly the banks don't want to talk to us at that stage of the game anyways.
Yeah, because like it's kind of a flyer for the bank to say, oh, you guys are gonna go. It's like, sure you are, sure you're gonna go in retro. Oh, some pie in the sky investor coming into my small town telling me about how they're gonna put in the golf simulator bar, and sure enough you pull it off, but I'm sure you get a lot of skeptics. So when you're presenting these deals to possible investors, how do you go about doing that to really ensure that they get the vision and that they get on board?
I think that first of all, Dave and I are really good visionaries. So, in being able to show somebody that vision, first we go back. Let's go back to what we have done so that you can see, that we have accomplished all of these things. And then we go through the numbers of what it looks like right now. So this is the numbers. These are what we have to offer. This is the project. This is what we're going to do. This is our timeline. This is what the budget is. So we're pretty open with our investors as to, what is happening on the project. Anybody is always obviously welcome on the project at any time. We are willing to share information. If you're that investor that's two steps behind us and you want to know what we do, absolutely. Come to the site, book a call with me. We'll have a conversation, whatever it is that you need to further along your process as well. And then sometimes, for the people that are two steps ahead of us, I find that lots of times they're once they know what you do and that they know, you're successful at what you do, they don't really want to be involved. They just want their monthly check or their bullet payment at the end. And all of those things are fine. We really just want to get to know our investor, our lender, so that we have a mutually beneficial relationship, because that's the other thing. It can't work when it only works for one side. It might work once, but we're all about building long-term relationships.
Yeah, definitely. So you had mentioned that you're stepping into the social media sphere. With raising significant amounts of capital, people need to typically know you, like you, and ultimately that's where it leads to the trusting you. So what are some ways that you guys are working on building up that credibility and getting people to like, know, and trust you, maybe using social media and also, in the offline space, how are you building those things with the existing or with the new people you're meeting?
Social media is not my strength, so that's why we went out to somebody else that actually knows how to do this well. So he has a proven background as well. So we will work with him to in my vision, what I want to create is almost a step by step to follow us along the journey of our renovation. So what it was prior, and I was doing a little bit of that. I just don't do it well. I don't do it often enough, or scheduled enough, because as an entrepreneur, right, you have 25 different hats all the time. So, and you have to, you have to choose something. So the social media kind of falls to the end. Generally, I will send our lenders something, pictures along the way, or again, open it up, come on out, but from a social media standpoint, I think there's a huge opportunity for certainly to bring all that together into one place. So it actually makes it easier and takes less time when you're going to put it out there. Because if you're going to put it out to your own, your lenders that you already currently have, why wouldn't you put it out there to everybody so that everybody can see it and then build that trust? So he is working on that. We're working on it together, but he's laying out all that framework right now. And basically, it's, what we do, how we do it, and how what the successes are at the end. So I think that in itself will help us immensely to grow our audience on the social media side. And certainly, with that comes trust. But even with if you have the best social media on the planet, I think, you still need to be able to meet somebody personally. I right or wrong, am a very handshake kind of deal person, but it's only because we've met, we've had a conversation, I know who you are, because we do a lot of private lending as well. So, I need to know who you are and what you've done, and I need you to prove that you were successful, or I need you to know your numbers and inside and out. Because again, it's not that I am a handshake person, and that has bit me in the ass already. But it wouldn't stop me from doing that still. I obviously we have paperwork in place and contracts and all that stuff, but if I don't feel that connection, then we're not either going to borrow or lend to somebody. We need to be personally known to each other. We don't, I, there's lots of people that have different thought processes on whether you need to be friends or not. For me, if we're friends, it's a bonus, but we're business partners first, so you need to be able to, the friend zone can sometimes get in the way of somebody saying to you, I don't like the way you're doing something, or what happened here, right? So we
I don't
always
want to hurt
want,
their feelings, or I
yes,
don't want to like stir up the thing, and
right.
they might not say something, but someone a little bit further out, or maybe just on the partnership side, is like, I don't think so. I don't think so, Nancy. Like, let me see the numbers, and my money's in the deal. And so if people want to, find out more, you'd mentioned that the social media is getting kickstarted and things like that. If they want to connect with you, find out more, what should they do?
You can reach out to me by email at nancy@btbrealestate.ca, or you can follow us on our Instagram channel at Beyond the Basics REI.
Oh,
It's on our
that's easy
Instagram,
enough. That'll be easy to find.
so.
Really interesting story. I knew it would be right from the top when I saw that you were coming on the show. So I really appreciate you letting us into the business model, and good luck retrofitting the business. Not that you need it, but it always helps. So I really appreciate your time,
Absolutely.
Nancy.
Thank you. It was great to be here today, and I appreciate it.
All right, guys, and we'll catch you on the next episode.